Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Okay, today on the show, I'm happy to have with us Christine Jefferson. She is a real estate investor, operator, and syndicator. She's been an investor since 2008. And now together with her partner has approximately 1,500 units as operators and $110 million portfolio. She's one of the principals in Mission Bay Capital Partners. We're going to dive in on lots of stuff as it relates to building a business and being an operator. Without further ado, Christine, welcome. How are you?
Good. How are you, Devin? Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Great. Can't wait to dive in. So I love to kind of learn a little bit about your background. I mean, you and I have connected at conferences and things like that, but for somebody that's not in your world, how did you get to real estate, and then why build it once you were introduced to it?
Right. So, and most people don't have to take this route. I just happened to take this route at the time in 2008, when I started in real estate investing. Apartment investing was not on my radar at that time, nor was it as talked about or as it seems to me as popular with conferences and webinars and podcasts as it is today. As a matter of fact, podcasts weren't even a thing when I started. I didn't even have a smartphone. You know, I started in 2008. So I was a stay-at-home mom for years and years. It was the best time of my life. I knew I needed to go back to work. And I wanted to be an entrepreneur so I could control my time and work for myself. And I happened to come across a book as I was taking my son to Chuck E. Cheese. I looked in the backseat of a car and there was a book, and it was by Donald Trump and Robert Kiyosaki, Why We Want You to Be Rich.
I remember that book.
I read that book. Oh, that one changed my life. Most people say Rich Dad, Poor Dad changed their life. But that book changed my life. Once I read that, I took every book at the library I could and educated myself on residential real estate. So I got involved in residential real estate in 2008. And I did a lot of buy, hold, rent, fix and flips, lease options, pretty much the gambit of everything there is to do in residential real estate. Along comes 2014, 2015-ish. And I was doing two simultaneously. One was a huge rehab. And I was thinking, I was doing something that large, let me just do a tear down build. Might as well.
Sure. Why not? Right.
it took up a lot of time and it cost a lot of money. And also at that time, apartments started coming up and I started hearing about apartments and I bought a book and I'm like, why? I'm spending this much money, it was close to $2 million on one door, and I'm working by myself, doing all this, I was by myself. I'm like, if I'm spending that much money and I have all this investing, real estate investing knowledge, why am I spending it on one door when I can be doing it, economies of scale. Everyone knows the benefit of that with multifamily. Why not multifamily? That's where I really need to be. That's where the money is going to be. It's less risk. Versus one door, and you're speculating on the market more when it's residential versus multifamily. So I started getting myself educated in 2017 on multifamily, and I burned the bridges. I jumped full feet into multifamily. I got myself a mentor, as I think everybody should have some sort of mentor doing business. It's challenging to do without having someone to guide you. So I got a mentor, and about a year or less than a year after that, I also met my business partner, Daniel Woodford, and we formed a partnership together. And that's it in a nutshell. So he had some already acquired some apartment investing. He started in 2014. So I started a couple of years, after him, but we did form a partnership. And this past year in 2019, we have had 4 acquisitions.
Outstanding.
Yeah. So, and our acquisitions are typically 100 units and up, but some of them were smaller than that this past year. But yes, we're on a roll. We're on a roll right now. We have one under contract now that we're closing.
Yeah. Outstanding. I love that story. I think, you know, that's a common theme. People in the single family world kind of reach some limitations. You know, a real estate transaction is difficult, and there's moving parts, and it's kind of the same work to close $200,000 property as a $10 million property in a lot of ways. So yes. I love the idea of just closing a few per year. What was it that, was there a resource or a book or a person that you met that you'd already been into real estate? Because I think there's a lot of people that I would say want to be in it, but they haven't done anything. And the people that have actually gone in and done investing, even if it's single family, it's kind of like a different world. They've actually crossed over and become real estate investors. But once you'd crossed over to kind of that single family world, what was it that triggered you to say, you know, economies of scale, go bigger and all that stuff?
Right. Well, in my last fix and flip that I did, the tear down rebuild, I lost money in that one, a significant amount. And at the same time, I was also a real estate agent, simply to have my license, to get access to comps, but then also sell my own properties. So while that huge house was on the market, I was also an agent until it sold. And when it fell, I'm like, there is no way that I'm going to make up my loss. It, you know, to me, being a real estate agent is more like a job. Even though you're still an entrepreneur. But for me, I'm like, there's no way that I'm going to make up that through being, you know, just a real estate agent. And that's why I knew that apartment investing was my way. I knew that was my ticket to pay off the funds that I have lost to make that up. And then live financially free. And I didn't see any other way other than apartment investing. And it's always appealed to me too, but I was a little reserved. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to underwrite a property. I don't know how to look for one. And I did reach out to somebody I knew. He's an educator, mentor, as an education company coaching. I can share with you who it was if I can.
Sure, I don't mind. Yeah. Okay.
So I called Michael Blanc. Because we live in the same area, and I knew him from residential investing days. I'm like, you know, I called him like, Michael, I need to move to apartment investing, and I have no idea what to do. And I started with him, and so I got coaching that way. And from there, I mean, it's a lot of work. Don't get me wrong.
Sure, sure.
It's not easy. Anyone can do it if they have the will and determination to do it.
Yep.
Why was huge. It was, you know, it still is huge. Just financial freedom, kids, you know, paying their college education, all the above. But multifamily, just after reading about it, again, podcasts weren't even around.
Right.
I think they were in 2017. Not like it is today.
Not like it is today. That's right.
Not like it is now. So I started reading and educating and underwriting deals, which is not something I like to do at all. Numbers, spreadsheets are not my thing, but I knew I needed to learn how to do that. And at the time, I didn't know there was any other options other than finding my own place and buying it on my own. And then I realized, wow, with multifamily, you're not on your own. There's so many opportunities to partner with someone and get started.
Yeah, 100%. The deal's so big that it makes sense to partner. I mean, if you're, and I've done this way too many times on the flip houses, you know, you're chasing a $20,000 profit, something goes wrong, and that turns into 15 or 12, and then you're splitting it with a partner. You're like, yes. Why did I get out of bed for that?
And then you pay taxes on it. You're like, yeah, that was worth what? Did I just make like $4 an hour for the last?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then equity, like you do with apartments. I mean, you're left with equity and tax write-off, you know, being a general partner. And there's just so many benefits that I don't think was even aware of when I first started.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I was the same way. One of the things I really like is the kind of a caliber of people you're dealing with kind of across the board. I mean, look, you deal with some owners or sellers that are difficult sometimes, but it's just a different caliber. The brokers are a different caliber. you know, kind of everybody in the space is a different caliber. And it feels like dealing with adults. I feel like with the single family world, you just have some real clowns running around.
It is. There are two different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
They really are. I mean, that's why you don't, nobody needs to start with residential real estate to do apartments.
Great point.
It's not at you. Well, let me start with a duplex or do a residential flip. That has nothing to do with apartment investing. You can start with apartment investing. I mean, I wish I got into it sooner.
Yeah, that's what I tell people too. Try, you know, to get started, get a small piece of a huge deal and then start learning. Two different that I'd done over 100 at the time, single family projects, right? And I was really proud of that. Nobody cared. The lenders didn't care. The brokers were almost like, oh, you're one of those guys. And so I started taking that off the resume because it didn't help. And I, you know, if there's any case study of being on one track for a really long time, it's me doing that for years. And it didn't really, I mean, some of the real estate fundamentals are the same, but it's two different tracks. It's two different ladders you're going to climb. If you want to do the multifamily stuff, start on the multifamily stuff in some capacity. And like we said, the deals are big enough that you can have a small piece of a large deal to get started, right?
Exactly. Whether it's finding a deal for a larger sponsor, you source a deal, an investor can find, source and underwrite the deal. If the numbers work out and they've never done a deal before, then they can partner with an operator who has.
Right.
And their resume, in the LOI or in broker relations and communication. So they have a stronger position in actually getting the deal. And that's, you know, a way to come in without having any experience or money, or somebody can partner with an operator as a co-sponsor and participate in, due diligence and oversee the underwriting, look at the numbers as well, and raise capital. Learn the aspects of asset management, what all is involved. And that's another way to partner up with an operator. And again, not having any money of your own is something that you can start that way by teaming up with someone, by partnering up and getting just a little piece of the general partnership, because an investor or a person will learn so much, even if the part of the partnership that they have is, minor. It's still the education, the value, the experience, and the confidence that they'll gain will just transform. It'll come out in the conversation that they have with their brokers or conversation that they have with investors. It'll just pour out of them that they're part of a team. They're part of their owner of an apartment complex. So having that on their resume and building their resume, it will just like launch. And that's how I started.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's such a great point for somebody that's looking to get started. You don't have to go do it all at once, nor should you. I mean, the likelihood of just going to buy 150 unit first time out of the gate with no credibility, it's not happening. Even if you had the resources, the money, whatever to do it, you shouldn't do it. I mean, there's just too much to learn. And it's not rocket science at all, but there's applied knowledge there, right? You can read and listen to podcasts and study. I think that my personal feeling is that gets you about halfway there. And the other half has to come from applied knowledge or applying it and being, having a little piece of the partnership on a big deal, is
right.
Huge. And look, you guys, I mean, yeah, you guys have climbed through that and now you're buying, big deals and off and running as an operator. Well, I want to kind of talk, Christine, about building the business, right? It's a pretty cool story, building it from scratch and now going out and buying these larger assets as the operator, in a short period of time. I mean, I call real estate kind of almost cheating at business sometimes because of all the advantages we have versus, if we owned a dry cleaner or a restaurant or, any other businesses we could have chosen to go into. Real estate's like, way better in so many ways. So you built this business, substantial business, over $100 million in assets in like a handful of years. Mm-hmm. How did that business building process look like? And is there any kind of key takeaways that you want to share with somebody maybe looking to do the same thing?
Yes. Well, a lot of growing pains and lessons learned. And as a matter of fact, we've grown so much over the past year. Like I said, we have one under contract now. When that closes, we are stepping back from acquisitions for a little bit. And because we've been working in our business so much this past year and a half, at the same time, we're working on our business and in our business and going back and forth. And it's just establishing at the same time policies and procedures. When we have an acquisition and we do our due diligence, we use Asana, but everything has a checklist and an order of things to get done. If you're, you know, over the years, we've established a timeline of when to do certain things for due diligence, when you acquire property, what's due, when to order title, when to order survey, you know, or be survey updated, when to schedule your on-site visit, all the checklists that you need from the seller, all of that is a systems, you know, processes, policies, procedures. So we're stepping back from our next acquisition for a couple of months and going to be working, like we have it in Asana, but we want to put it in a manual. Like we want to structure our business like a franchise would.
Love it.
So we can just kind of have it all. So somebody else can operate it, you know, eventually and know what to do through our policy, through everything. Just making our business run like a franchise and structuring it like a franchise. Because with franchises, when someone sets up, they have all their policies, procedures, they have their operating manual, and it works like a machine. So you want, yes, of course, you're always going to have hiccups and you know, different directions. Every property, it has its own story for sure. But having the guidelines, even for anyone that we hire, such as a bookkeeper, asset manager, they all have their own description, their job description, and sticking to that and then what they're supposed to do instead of just hiring someone. And then you're so busy because I've experienced this that you don't even have time to train them because you're so busy.
Right.
And then it doesn't work out. And so just stepping back right now and just focusing on making us our business run like a business company should.
Yeah. There's a huge amount of discipline required to do that. Right. Because it's, as an entrepreneur, the tendency is to just get it done. Right. And I think we all of us entrepreneurs struggle with that. I could probably do it the best. Let me just do it. And it's a special kind of discipline, especially for an entrepreneur that's kind of go, 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 or a, you know, ready, fire, aim type person, to sit down, stop, spend 10 times or 20 times the amount of time documenting in a task than actually do it. I mean, it's excruciating to do.
It is.
But once you do it, and this happened for us a few years ago, I said, oh, I just saved myself from ever doing that again. I just saved myself 100 hours over the next year. It was very painful to stop, document it, and then realize, oh, there's all these things in my head that I just fly through. It's actually a 20 step process. I never thought about that, but to explain it to somebody off the street, it's a 20 step process and I've got to document that. So, but once you do that, that discipline process and give it away to somebody, holy smokes, it's like the heavens open up, right?
It frees your time up to what you should be doing, which is whether it's raising capital, looking for deals, but it frees your time up to what you are best at that will grow your business.
Yep.
Doing the bookkeeping, accounting, reconciling, that's just not going to grow your business. It's going to help run it, but it's not going to grow it. So putting someone in that position, that's a lot less than you're worth and specialize in that. That's what they do. Delegating and handing off things, and it is a little bit of letting go, which I'm the ready, fire, aim kind of person, and I'm the go, 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 go person you just talked about.
Yep.
So My patience isn't there to kind of hold someone's hand and, you know, make sure, but it does need, it does need to be done for sure. You know, looking back, it's going to help grow any business. Is going to help grow the business, putting all of this in place.
Yeah, I love it. I follow a lot of stuff from Strategic Coach, a guy named Dan Sullivan. Has been coaching businesses for forever, and I'm not a part of his program, but you know, kind of some of his concepts about always being doing as an entrepreneur or business owner what you're fascinated and motivated by, and just shedding everything else. I mean, to me, that's like the most exciting thing I can imagine. Is I go to my business and I just work on stuff I'm really good at and it's really valuable, like. There's nothing I'd rather do than that, you know? And so this kind of framework, whether it's multifamily real estate or some other business, but if you approach it with that framework, it can be the best thing ever. So.
Yeah, totally agree. No, I like him. E-Myth is another one. Those three books. Well, along with this, they're all kind of related.
So what were the first two? I think the audio cut out, Christine, but I heard Traction third. And what were
Traction,
the first two?
E-Myth.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. E-Myth for sure. When you mentioned kind of building a franchisable model, right? And that's definitely a takeaway from E-Myth. You mind sharing some of the tools you're using? You mentioned Asana. Are there other tools you want to kind of give a shout out to? I really geek out on that stuff.
Okay. We love Asana. That way, and we do have an operations assistant right now working for us. If we have tasks or anything, we either put them in there or have him put them in there. And then if they're done, we just look at, I don't have to be like, did you do this? Did you still have this to do? Or you can write notes back. You can categorize it per job or per task. We love Asana. We use IDR as our portal for investors.
Elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah. So IDR is Investor Deal Room, and there are other platforms out there that provide something similar, such as it used to be IMS. Now I think it's AIM. That was another one we looked at, but we really like IDR. It's for investors. It houses their, when we have a raise, we can put our webinar on there and all of their legal documents, subscription agreements, the property summary, and investors sign up to invest through the portal, and everything is housed securely with their legal documents, their K-1. So it tracks everything for the investors and for us. So that's huge for us. I could not imagine doing a raise without one. Our raises they range from the on the low end of 1.6 to the one, and this was this past year in 2019, what ranged from 1.6 to 8.3 million.
Yeah, and it's awesome.
And there's no way that we could have like done that through an Excel spreadsheet and all. So for us, IDR has been helpful. Same with Asana. What other, those are, I would say, primarily the two.
Mm-hmm.
And Dropbox. Dropbox.
Yeah.
Everyone. Yeah. Dropbox is our lifesaver. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're doing a capital raise, $8 million and you got a $50,000 minimum, I mean, just do the math, or you got an average investor at 100K or whatever it is. I mean, you have to have some sort of process in place there and system. Talk about not adding value. You know, you could spend all day chasing spreadsheets and updating stuff and pulling your hair out. It's like, that's adding zero value to the acquisition process.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
A lot of work.
Yep.
So automate that, get that off your plate and work on the big stuff. I love it. I love it. So you guys will go into kind of a pause mode on acquisitions, continue to kind of clean some stuff up and build stuff internally, and then get out there and kind of resume on the acquisition side.
Yes. Probably, we're already done. Probably the end of the second quarter, beginning of third quarter, we'll resume.
Yep.
Acquisitions again.
Yep. Makes sense. Love it. So what's your plan for the next couple of years? Is it just to kind of continue building the business and build in more free time, or you just kind of take it a year at a time, or what's your vision there for the company?
Although free time would be nice. I would love that. it's nothing I really have right now. I mean, honestly, I know like financial freedom, which is great, but it's not freedom of time for me at this point in time in our business, because we're growing and launching our business.
Right.
But that the goal of that is to come and our business operate on its own a few years from now. Right now, Daniel and I are just working on growing our business, getting a foundation set, and acquiring asset management, and kind of having, I mean, eventually we'd like to, you know, do development eventually. Right. Also, we want to focus on raising capital and having that well established. So we have the capital that we need, you know, rather quickly when we have a property ready to go, or even provide capital as an equity for another operator's deal. So just having spending time focusing on raising capital is another next path we're going to be taking and focusing on.
Yeah, I mean, that's something you can grow kind of forever. And if you have your own deal flow, great. If you have a couple operators you want to partner with, you've got that option too. And that it creates deal flow for your investors. And I've seen that model work really well in a lot of different cases. So it's such a flexible kind of business model to be able to do that and just continue to kind of always be raising capital, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. That's awesome. This is really great information, Christine. If somebody wants to learn more about what you guys are up to, or maybe reach out to you, what's a good avenue for them to do that?
The simplest thing to remember, especially if you're listening to this driving and you can't write anything down, I would just say, which is missionbaycp.com. That's missionbaycp, like capital partners.com. And I'm Christine Jefferson. My contact info is on our website.
Perfect. Well, we'll link to the Mission Bay website in the show notes. So if you're driving, please don't look it up right now. But once you get home, you can pull up your iPhone or whatever and look at the description and click the link and go right over to the website. So, this is awesome. I love talking shop, operational stuff. Congratulations on your success. I wish you continued success. And I think you probably inspired some people here that were in your shoes a few years ago. So thank you for that.
Yeah, my pleasure. It can be done.
That's it. I love it. Thank you, Christine. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Devin, for having me.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.